Welcome to Movies Are Life. I'm your host, Nathan Chandler. And yeah, happy December. It's getting cold. There's Christmas lights out, which is a perfect setting for today's movie, Stationed at Home. It's an independent movie that I'm really excited to talk about, and I hope that you check out. It's pretty cool, but I had a chance to speak with the film's director, and I want to get into that in a little bit. So, it's more of a traditional episode of Movies Are Life, but I thought I actually kind of have a plan for the rest of the year, and so I wanted to share that with you and get you excited about what is coming up. So, as you might have noticed, we've been doing our series, You Had Me at Rewind, and that has been so fun. So a lot of those conversations were pre-recorded, but I thought I'd do a fun special holiday episode, and it's we're going to cover one of my favorite movies from the 1990s, early 1990s, with Home Alone. I could probably play this movie in my head without seeing it on the screen, and it would play just like as if I was watching it on TV. That's how much I know this movie, how much I love this movie, and how much it's a vital part of my childhood. And I'm really excited to bring in a couple of my best friends to talk about the film. So be on the lookout for that episode next week. After that, it's that time of year again. We're going back to our annual tradition of recapping the year of 2025 and discussing the top 10 films of 2025 and television shows. I'm excited that Mark Plitch has agreed to come on and do that again. I'm not sure exactly how many times we've done it at this point, but the last couple of years he's come on, and that episode is always fun because he always, there's some crossover on some of the films that we like, but he always brings even movies that I haven't heard about. And so we both, it's a very diverse list from both of us. So that'll be a lot of fun. And also I'm sure I can convince Whitney to come on to kind of recap the year and discuss some of her favorite films and television shows of the year. There's actually some movies there that that she saw without me, and so there might be a couple that she can recommend. And so and then heading into 2026, I'm really excited just to especially as the best the Oscars heats up and the best pictures, like I'll be catching up on those films. But also I felt really good about You Had Me at Rewind, and so I have already lined up some new guests, some new movies. And so I will be recording those in early January, and we'll have those rolling out soon after that. And so there's going to be a lot of fun movies on the list. I'm telling you now, you're really going to enjoy the movies that we're going to cover in this new group of episodes. So be on the lookout for that in 2026. Okay, so that's enough about me. Let's talk about Stationed at Home. This film, it's set in a frigid Christmas Eve in 1998 in a small forgotten city, and a solitary taxi driver, he's on the graveyard shift, and he's anxiously awaiting the sight of the International Space Station. As the hours count down, a parade of offbeat misfits that you won't forget. These characters and actors are amazing. They kind of derail his plans, propelling the story to a ending that you don't expect. This film is part holiday, part comedy, part drama, definitely character study, and even a little bit of sci-fi elements in there. I love independent film. This year, if it could be summed up in a way, it's been the year of independent film for me, not only in the state of Oklahoma. This film was made in the state of New York, but it's kind of reinvigorated just like how much talent is out there and how there's just so many people who are trying to break through. And it's incredible because this movie is available on pretty much all the digital platforms, certainly Apple TV and Prime. We'll make sure to link to the notes about that. But I was excited to talk to award-winning writer and director Daniel Mashari about this. This is his debut feature film. And so let's go ahead and cut to him, and I think you'll really enjoy this conversation. So before we dive in, could you introduce yourself and share a little bit about how this film, Stationed at Home, first came into being?
Yeah, my name is Daniel Mashari. This film, Stationed at Home, came to be when I was on a bus from New York City to Ithaca, New York, and we stopped in Binghamton, which is about 3 hours north of New York City. And it was a cold, very cold winter night, which I'm kind of used to up here. And essentially, we stopped in Binghamton, and I stepped out to stretch my legs, and I was listening to the song Dusk by Duke Ellington while looking out at this beautiful abandoned building, this big building on a train track. And something about the cold and the winter sort of look, and then also the music of Dusk by Duke Ellington, conjured this mood in my mind of the city as this blanket, almost this forgotten city that was just so textured and otherworldly. So then I imagined my friend Eric Bjarnar, who plays Ralph in Stationed at Home, as this cab driver, this lone cab driver in the distance of the city, where you can kind of just hear him as this small cab figure. And the whole film sprouted from that feeling.
Well, I will certainly say from that feeling, that got translated perfectly, because that's exactly how I felt while watching this film. I mean, you can definitely feel the cold. You can feel the city, but not like in a bad way. As we're doing this conversation, you're wearing a scarf, and it's very much, you know, if this movie could be bundled in anything, it would definitely be a scarf.
Yeah. Normally I wouldn't, but this studio I'm in is pretty cold right now. So,
so for listeners who haven't seen this film, how would you describe it in your own words? Like, at the core, what is Stationed at Home about?
Love that question. I think everyone's going to have their own feeling about the film, in the sense that its mood is very open for, you know, just living in the film. So I feel like this film ultimately is about strangers and finding magic in the mundane, and how strangers can find an adventure that they didn't expect. And I think we go through life, you know, kind of avoiding strangers, but this film is very much about how strangers collide without expecting it. So I always want people to leave the film with kind of a gentle feeling, a feeling that the world can be magical. Everyday moments and everyday characters can be magical, and locations that you might overlook.
Right, right. Yeah, no, I liked that sense a lot. And I would say, especially even though this film is set in 1998, and I even find myself kind of getting into it and post like COVID times and stuff, we're a little bit more weary of strangers, I would say, overall. And so I did like this, how this unexpected relationships, how those were developed and came to be, and, you know, how they just kind of exist with one another without getting into what drives them, if that makes sense. They're just kind of all along for the ride.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's COVID, but I think also just technology. I think we're so, everything is so much easier now, that some of these feelings of being lost that the film covers, you know, these characters are kind of lost in the world, like quite literally at some points. And I think if they had cell phones, or, you know, if they had smartphones specifically, so many of these shenanigans and issues that they get into just maybe not, would not have happened, because, you know, they could just, you know, call an Uber rather than, you know, the one cab driver that's working on Christmas Eve.
Right. Yeah. You did an amazing job kind of setting up what kind of inspired this, but the story is set on Christmas Eve. So why Christmas Eve?
Again, I love that question. So Christmas Eve to me, I think, well, 1998 was when the International Space Station first launched. And we really wanted this film to have kind of a magic to it. So I always felt like Christmas Eve is kind of a nostalgic time, and also a time where, you know, not everyone's having the most merry Christmas all
right.
the
time. Yeah.
And I really wanted to make a film that felt like we're with these characters who are kind of on the fringes of society a bit. And what's going on those fringes of society? Well, they're definitely drinking. They're definitely going on a wild ride with this cab driver. And I don't know. I just, it always felt to me like the Christmas spirit, so to speak, would hit them whether they wanted it to or not. You know, George rejects Christmas, although he wears a, you know, snowflake kind of Christmassy sweater. You know, these characters, whether they like it or not, are going to get hit by the spirit that Ralph has for a specific reason, you know, the International Space Station. So, you know, I always felt like Christmas Eve was just this overarching, really magical kind of a nostalgic feeling that I've always felt.
Yeah, no, and that's kind of what I liked about this movie, because I don't think you could personally put it in the mix of Christmas, like, here's a Christmas movie. But it, I actually had this conversation with my teenage daughter driving around the other day, because with everything we see, you know, and especially the Hallmark movies and all that, you know, like every house is lit up, you know, everyone has a tree and all this stuff. And we were driving around and, you know, I was like, you know, there's more houses that don't have lights than do, you know, but that's kind of what I liked about this movie, was that it did, it, like you said, it, you know, Christmas is definitely different for different people. It just felt, especially as it's cold right now, it just totally felt like not just Christmas Eve or day, it just that time of season. I definitely felt that.
Yeah, I think maybe you mentioned, we just had another reviewer talk about, and I think you mentioned this as well, something about the Christmas is sort of like a backdrop, but it's not like the most it's not like forefront. It's kind of like in the, yeah, it's in the zeitgeist, so to speak.
Was that the reason that you chose to film this in black and white cinematography? I loved it. I thought it looked terrific and definitely helped helped with that cold feeling.
Yeah. Well, I'll shout out to Jackson Jarvis, my incredible friend and collaborator, who's our cinematographer on the film and was with me from the get-go the second I sent him the script. And I always saw it in black and white. And he also saw it in black and white. So there was never even a debate as to whether it should be in color. I think one time we sort of joked about how it would be in color, and immediately just felt foul and totally and totally wrong. I mean, there are a number of reasons for it. I think just generally intuitively, it felt right to have it in black and white. I think so much of it just has to be how it feels when you're making a film. You know, whatever decision you're making, ultimately it has to feel right. But, you know, if I were to analyze it, I think, it makes it cold, as you said. It kind of pushes into that cold winter vibe that these characters are enduring. And also, I think for the audience, it kind of allows them to focus on subtlety in the performances. And these actors are just so brilliant. I'm so lucky to have worked with these characters. I mean, these actors are irreplaceable. Nobody else could play Ralph. Nobody else could play Harry. And Joe the Cop by Alec Osinski. I mean, these actors are just incredible. So for them to be able to get on the wavelength of the film, this subtlety of human behavior, you know, it's like putting a microscope on these moments that we overlook in life. And I think the black and white really helps allow the audience to sink into this sort of microscope.
Right. And I'm glad you mentioned the characters, because I just felt that they were so lived in and also had very unforgettable faces, like in a good way, like this energy, but also stand apart from one another, but also feel like they would live in this community as well. So I think you mentioned that you knew some of the actors, but like, what was your process for casting this? And did you know a lot of these actors, or did you discover them?
Yeah, I love talking about this. So the actors were as much muses of mine as the city of Binghamton itself. They really were muses. I wrote the parts for about, 75% of the actors, I'd say.
Okay.
And for me, it was such a treat, because we all, at least most of us, studied at the Actors Workshop of Ithaca under Eliza Van Cort, who's one of my producers, and she plays Elaine. And these actors were just people I couldn't get out of my head. They were just such good actors and people that I just knew would have such great chemistry as well. And I think when you're casting, you know, you have to think not just about the character, but also how the actor will also have certain chemistry with other actors. And also, so much of a character is the energy of the character. And I think the actors in this film, again, I just find them irreplaceable. I think it would feel wrong if someone else was Ralph. It would be like something's missing, you know? And I think too, the actors in the film just really understood the vibe of the film. of Binghamton itself as well.
There's a lot of action, and I wouldn't consider this a movie slow paced at all. But there's a lot of time where the characters are by themselves, and it's a little quieter, kind of nonverbal. Is that a hard thing to balance as a filmmaker to get those type of performances out of the actor?
I personally, it wasn't hard because again, these actors understand one really important thing that if you can be alone and silent, silence is such an important part of acting because that's most of life. Most people are silent and just in the moment. And a film really is, in my opinion, a series of gestures. And these actors just understand like what a look means or what a subtle nuance means. And so for me, that was actually not difficult. In fact, I think part of the preparation that Jackson and I did when we were preparing the film allowed the actors to know that the film, the architecture of the film was really well prepared. So they felt safe to be able to take risks, but also know that everything we're shooting wasn't random. It wasn't like we just needed coverage for the sake of coverage. We had a plan of how this film would unfold visually. So they really could sink into that architecture of the film.
That's right. Now, you wrote this film, right, along with other co-writers, correct?
Yeah, I wrote the film and I developed the story with Jackson, mostly okay. Jackson and another guy, Vincent. And but yeah, Jackson and I, as we were translating the film from script to film, we would get ideas to make the film, you know, kind of textured in certain ways. And sometimes we basically didn't even need a line because we knew a shot would cover that moment. So there was a lot of development all through the edit even. So, you know, I always say this, I mean, a lot of people say this, but the script is really never done until the edit is done. So, yeah. But Jackson was with me along with Eliza Van Court, who again is just an incredible collaborator and producer and actor. They were with me from the get-go all the way through the edit. So I was able to send them cuts and have them watch the film while I was editing as well.
I thought this film had a lot of subtext, and I always appreciate a movie that trusts its audience to figure things out. So I thought there was a lot of subtext with, you know, grief, loneliness, but also purpose and like searching for meaning. And I felt like this movie makes you lean in and consider what things might mean rather than like spell them out. And so like, how do you balance, I guess, that clarity with ambiguity, like as far as like not spelling everything out, but also I just liked how this movie ended and just made me a little bit more contemplative. And how do you trust that process as a writer?
You mean, I see. So you mean to sort of balance the contemplative nature of it with the sort of humor? Is that sort of what you mean?
Yeah, I think so. And so without like making it, I still think at a surface, now some people might argue with me as far as I think all film is art, but I think you really balance the entertainment aspect of it, but also kind of having a deeper meaning that you were trying to convey.
I love that question because I think it all comes down to the characters as well. And so when I was writing the film, you know, and thinking about these characters and the people I had in mind for the film, I was always curious about what was underneath maybe a sort of a humor, you know? So like, was George really someone who denied the moon landing, or was that sort of just like a defense mechanism against, you know, being part of society, right? So there are sort of these hidden character traits that I wanted to reveal throughout the film. And I think too, this the character of Ralph, in my opinion, was always a grounding force and a sort of this innocent vibe that he was able to sort of be for these other actors and for these characters. So I think the characters fed off of the kind of in tune with Binghamton feeling that Ralph has, if that makes sense. It's sort of like he was kind of like this good influence, so to speak, and they were kind of a bad influence for him.
One thing I liked about this movie is also, like, it's kind of almost hard to put it in a genre. You could do holiday, it could be a comedy, it could be a drama, and you touched on this, I think it could even be a little sci-fi as well. And you talked about the International Space Station and how much this is becomes a mythical symbol, and you know, we see lots of things on television screens. So are you like a sci-fi junkie? Like, where did that idea come from?
No, I'm like the furthest person from a guy. when we were writing the script, Jackson and I were really thinking about camera angles as kind of viewing toward the cosmos. So anytime we were wide, we wanted to be just slightly low. And sometimes when we were on a character, we wanted to be slightly high sometimes. So we wanted to create this this sort of melancholic kind of feeling through how the city of Binghamton was like kind of on Earth.
It being set in 1998, was it hard from a production standpoint for it to be feel like it's set in the 90s and not present day?
Oh, yeah. So it actually wasn't that difficult because Binghamton was, and when we were shooting, pretty empty in the winter. And so we didn't really have to move many cars around and that sort of thing. The Binghamton Film Office was incredibly helpful. Our film was actually part of establishing the Binghamton Film Office. And so when we ended up shooting, they would help us find locations that looked period, find different areas in the city that didn't need too much change in terms of, you know, cars or, you know, what are those things called? Yeah, we had to remove some meters to make it feel that way. But yeah, no, it was actually like fairly straightforward. The stuff that we had to decorate a lot more were interior shots and interior scenes to make those appear more period, because it technically is a period film, I guess. You know, 1998 is a good, you know, 25 years before we started shooting.
How many days did you shoot for? Did you mainly have to shoot at night for this film?
Yeah. Yeah. So every production day was from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. And so we would get up at the Comfort Inn in Binghamton at, you know, say 3-4 p.m., get ready, go to work at 6 p.m. when everyone else would come back from their days. And then we would just, you know, have the whole city to ourselves, essentially. So it was really an incredible experience to have essentially a canvas, a city as a canvas for us to paint on. So it was, and you know, for us too, it was, I have to talk as well about, you know, from the beginning as we were developing the script, and, you know, Jackson and I would go to Binghamton on a bus. You know, we would take the bus from, you know, New York to Binghamton on a Greyhound and just scout the city as we were developing the script, because we wanted the film to be informed by the city itself. We wanted to know which alleyway we were going to shoot, and we wanted to know how we were going to locate the story with that bridge. And Jackson had this great idea when we were writing the script of having that bridge as this sort of point of entrance and exit for Ralph. You know, when he's leaving town, he's going right on the bridge. And when he's leaving town, he's going left. So it was just a really great experience, very existential experience to essentially get the film script done while we were scouting.
A lot of this film is set in Ralph's taxi. Was it hard to film so many car scenes?
Believe it or not. So all the driving stuff was shot on a soundstage.
Okay.
So it was in a, there was no official soundstage for green screen work in Binghamton at the time. And so, meaning there wasn't a good enough space, you know, a big enough space to like have, a green screen. So we ended up using an airport hangar, and they were really nice there to let us use that. And essentially, yeah, the whole thing was a poor man's process. And basically we just, you know, had people shaking the car, and and we shot the whole, all the driving stuff in there, all the interior of the cap. And yeah, it looks incredibly perfect. Thanks to Jackson, who, again, not only was part of the script and DP, but he also did all of those visual effects.
Right. So it
was just an incredible journey working with him and getting this film to look as if it was actually shot with a process trailer or something like that. I mean, people think that this was actually, they were driving. So
yeah, well, and I'm not someone who necessarily looks for those things. I think that black and white cinematography helps with that, but like honestly, at no point did I even think that it was a soundstage, which is great. You know, just that allows you to dive deeper into the story.
Yeah, Jackson and I definitely have been in competition as to who's more anal retentive. To be like, we're just such like perfectionists to a point where we just reinforce this bad behavior. So yeah, it's just very much an incredible journey.
What do you hope viewers walk away with after seeing this film?
I think what I really want people to walk away with is, you know, when they leave the theater where we've had multiple screenings at festivals and or when they leave watching it at home, I really want them to, you know, leave the film. And I hope that they go out with a more of a gentle feeling toward, you know, everyday people and also a sense that there is magic in everyday life. There is the possibility to find a beautiful thing in a moment you might overlook. You know, it could be as simple as, you know, just a quiet moment with a stranger who you see for 2 seconds. So I think there is really just magic in everyday existence.
Yeah, beautifully said. I'll put notes with this podcast about how people can access this film, but tell our listeners how they can watch this film.
Yeah, so anyone can watch it in North America, where we got distribution on Apple TV, Amazon Prime, Fandango, DVD. If you're out in the middle of nowhere and no internet, it's on satellite cable as well. So yeah, you can watch it basically anywhere you get films. And please remember, too, to rate and review it on Rotten Tomatoes. It helps us tremendously.
How's the reception been?
It's been overwhelmingly positive. I think this film it's one of those films that I think people kind of didn't expect, because we really, our film, we don't have really huge names, although we do have Jamie Donnelly, who is Jan from Grease, a legend. But we really don't have huge, huge names in our film. And so I think because of that, it's like, where did this film come from? And I think people are, you know, I think they're seeing this film that, you know, had an incredible world premiere at Glasgow, Brooklyn Film Festival, US premiere, and more festivals after that, where it's getting shepherded into the zeitgeist. And I think people are welcoming it as this gem that is just like, where did it come from? So it's kind of this film that, you know, was just a real dedication of an incredible group of artists and passionate people who really wanted to make something original and make something that isn't often made these days. So I think people are really excited to see a film that really doesn't compromise anything. It's just a genuine collaboration of an incredible team.
That's awesome. What's next for you?
Well, other than promoting this film, I'm working on some stuff. I wouldn't want to say too much right now because it's early days, but there's some ideas brewing.
Okay, awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to do this. And I know you're very busy, but I want to just encourage everyone to watch Station at Home. I think it would be the surprise holiday film of your season for sure. So I really hope people go and check it out.
Thanks a ton, Nathan.
Okay, have a great one. I hope you all really enjoyed that conversation. I did as well. Daniel was such a nice guy, and I really appreciate him coming on and talking about this movie. I hope you take the chance and go out and find it today. Thanks again for listening. Real quick, as always, we're on all the social media platforms, but I've really made a concentrated effort to put a lot of my content on Substack. I really have fallen in love with the platform, and I'm really starting to build up my audience there. My content will still continue to be on the website, but I'm kind of maybe defocusing a little slightly away from social media and just putting it on the Substack platform, because it's just a super easy way to promote my podcast, but to post my movie reviews, and also really just have its own little social media feeds. I like giving little comments about certain news items and new trailers that are out there. So please find us there. It's at Movies Are Life, and follow us. Right now, it's free. I'm really trying to work on building up the audience there, but as it gets built up, I'm hoping to, in 2026, provide some paid options, some bonus content that people will really enjoy and check out. So once again, substack.com/@MoviesAreLife. I think you'll really enjoy it. I hope everyone is closing out the year in grand fashion, and we'll talk to you next time. Take care.